Ladies and gentlemen, boys and ghouls, it's time for Below Grade Level. Listener, beware, you're in for a scare.
Hello and welcome to Below Grade Level, the show where we take the books that we read as kids and read them as adults and ruin them. I'm one of your hosts, Jonathan Eaton. With me as always is Becca Eaton.
Hello.
And Chris Selesky.
Hello.
How are you guys doing tonight?
Very well, thank you.
Good. I'm so glad.
It was a day, but I'm not going to get into it.
Good. Let's not get into
you
it, you know.
Keep that shit to yourself. You know?
And there came a day.
That you save that for your therapist.
Lovely Chris. Voice you hear is our extremely special guest. First time guest of the podcast, and we're huge fans of his. Clint McElroy, hello. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. I went in for mood lighting.
It's
spooky. Scary tale we're about to unwind for everybody.
Yeah, it's very appropriate. If you're listening, you can hear Clint on such amazing shows like The Adventure Zone, which we're huge fans of. And you sometimes pop up on, I believe, My Brother, Me, and the McElroy Family Clubhouse.
I do. I show up on both. whenever my parole officer allows it, I pop right in there.
Well, we are gigantic fans of yours, and we are absolutely thrilled to have you on our show and thrilled to read this book, which you picked for us. The book we're about to read is Christopher Pike's Scavenger Hunt. We've read some Christopher Pike before, and it's always a banger. It's always a good time.
Yeah, they're always my favorite by far,
because
it's crazier shit than I could ever imagine in my entire lifetime.
It's guaranteed insanity.
Yeah.
It's truly stuff that I'm like, wow, I can't believe I read this as a kid.
Yeah, someone wrote these words and then let tweens read it.
I shouldn't have. So, Clint, my question for you is, I heard that you have read this book.
I have read this book, yes.
Now, my main question is, did you read this book, like, a while ago, or did you read this for us?
I read it for you, my
friend.
Oh, friends.
My God.
I told you you're my friends. I had a humble brag. I had to fly to Germany.
Humble brag.
And I consumed this on the flight to Germany. So I went
awesome.
Right from this to Oktoberfest in Munich. So,
oh, my God.
You know.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
Ugh. Yeah. I'm very jealous, actually, of that.
No, it's incredible.
Well, and the fact that you still wanted to come back and read it must say good things about the book.
Well,
if you're like, yeah, I want to experience this
again. No, you were talking earlier before we started recording about, you know, how sometimes you guys have read some books that, you know, didn't really set the world on fire. But that can be some of your funniest bits, I believe.
Honestly,
I think that, you know, sometimes the worst subject material provides the more comedy. So
yeah,
at MST3K proved that strategy. Oh, I believe. Yeah.
That's very true.
MST3K is engraved in my soul.
I think so. Yeah, same.
And we're soul brothers, my friend.
So have you ever read any Christopher Pike before this?
No, ma'am.
Okay.
Here's the thing, I mean, of course, I'm familiar. But the whole R.L. Stine, Christopher Pike,
yeah.
I mean, really kind of came about in my son's generation.
Right.
And, you know, I have always been a huge reader. And I started reading. I was living in Nevada. I was 11 years old. And we were living in a big apartment complex, and I went walking past the dumpster of this apartment complex. Yeah, I'm a dumpster diver. But I walked past this dumpster, and there was a grocery bag, and I could tell it was full of something. And it looked very square. So, I mean, I took a chance. I opened it, and inside were 36 Doc Savage paperbacks.
That's awesome.
the first 36, the original, well, not the original, because the originals were, of course, in pulp magazines, but this was the first, I think it was
published.
Bantam.
That's
yeah,
crazy.
And it was in the paperbacks, and I devoured him. And so, I mean, in a way, I guess you could call that young adult.
Yeah, that's what I wished.
I know nothing about Doc Savage. Can you give me like a really quick rundown of what that is?
Venture Brothers. It was the Venture Brothers and Johnny Quest before. Venture Brothers and Johnny Quest. The Doc Savage was from the pulps in the 1920s and 1930s. He came around before Superman. He came around before all the costumed heroes.
And a little like proto Indiana Jones, kind of.
Very much.
Like a,
Doc was raised by his father to be the ultimate human. He was brilliant. He was trained in all these sciences and peak physical condition, and had a gang of five assistants that, and they just went all over the world and had all these crazy, crazy encounters. And I kind of graduated from Tom Swift Jr. and the Hardy Boys and the Happy Hollisters, which I guess were young adult books, and transitioned into Doc Savage. And I haven't been the same since. I consumed all the pulps.
It'll change you. Yeah.
And kind of went right from that. But, you know, when I was 14, I was consuming, you know, the classics, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, and, you know, on and on, sci-fi and fantasy. And you know, and then on to Tolkien and everything else.
Yeah.
And then, yes, I am one of those hipsters who says Tolkien.
That's the way you said, that's the correct way to pronounce it.
Yeah. So see how cool I am?
You're in good company here.
I don't say it like that, but I'm white trash. So I don't mind hearing it.
Yeah.
It sounds better.
Yeah.
Well, also our area's accent, like Tolkien.
Yeah.
Tolkien.
Yeah. Can we not do a Baltimore accent in this book?
Oh, please.
It's so triggering.
The last book we read, Clint, the main character was from Philly, right?
From Philly,
The main character was from Philly, and we were like, oh, that's close enough to Baltimore. We'll do the Baltimore accent.
Oh.
And, it's not only...
Go to the Wawa and grab a hoagie.
Oh, right now, all those people in Philadelphia are cursing your names.
They can curse our names,
they know in their hearts
it's the same.
It's all mid-Atlantic.
It's all mid-Atlantic.
Mid-Atlantic,
as I say. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, we read a book called Phantom Valley, and at a certain point I was like, oh, it's perfect, because you just go Phantom Valley.
I've tried to train that accent out of me, and then I get tired or drunk and it comes back, and then I hear it in the book and I can't undo it.
Well, that's what I was gonna say. We were doing it so much in that last book that I was finding it seeping into my non-podcast voice, and I was like, this is dangerous. We have to not do a main character Baltimore voice. Baltimore. Holy crap. Okay. Well, let's dive in. As a tradition, usually Chris will describe what the cover looks like. And I love the covers of Christopher Pike's books. So, Chris, why don't you tell us what's going on in this?
All right. So, author of Remember Me and the Final Friend series, Christopher Pike, in that wonderful, wonderful salmon-colored early 90s, late 80s font. Of like everything,
it's like hot salmon,
neon salmon.
This marker's broke. Like that's the best way to describe it.
Yeah.
And it looks like a young man holding a piece of paper in a yellow shirt, another young man, but also he kind of looks like he's 40 with a backpack and a flashlight
and khakis.
Gotta have the chinos. And
he looks a little like Sean Astin.
And a young lady are in a graveyard, and they're shining a flashlight on
something.
She's
wearing, like, a t-shirt dress, it looks like.
And there's a nice, like, mausoleum in the background and fog.
Yeah. You know how you wear a belt over your t-shirt.
Of course, yeah.
And then the title, Scavenger Hunt, but it's prefaced by saying, pray they don't find what they're looking for. And then it just looks red.
Well, I also just realized there's, like, thick footprints
in
the bottom.
It's like footprints in sand.
In the red sand.
Yeah.
So have you... You all have not read this.
No, we have not.
We're going in
fresh. That scene on the cover is not in the book. I'm telling you, I can't even remember if they go to a cemetery.
That's incredible.
That's amazing.
Oh,
so
what a
that's off to
a
good start there, Christopher.
Oh, good. Oh, I love Christopher Pike so much. Christopher Pike, Scavenger Hunt.
And yeah, it says Remember Me in the Final Friend series. We read Remember Me, and that was the craziest shit
and I will never,
I think we've ever read.
I'll never forget. Like, that's a good title, because I will never forget Remember
I will
Me.
Never
that was
forget Remember
crazy.
Me. I don't know the other one, though.
That was about a girl who was at
a
party.
The other book
was
Forget Me.
Remember Me was about a girl who died at a party and then came back as a ghost and was just like a ghost for the book with like
a ghost.
Oh, wait,
I was thinking of the other book with the android time traveling girl.
That was The Eternal Enemy.
Oh, The Eternal Enemy, of course.
Remember Me was the ghost girl and the like alcoholic detective.
Yeah, like Columbo.
Yes.
Yeah.
With it. Yeah, a strange daughter.
This book makes balcony. Stephen King look like Jane Eyre.
Stephen King wishes he could be as good as Christopher Pike.
Yeah.
This book is for Sharon, and thank you for the Internet Archive for digitizing it. I love it that we start off with a prologue. We're not even going into chapter one.
Yeah, I don't remember the other ones having a prologue.
I don't either.
But I never remember what we read because
pretty
it's
sure
so
it's
crazy. It leaves my brain.
Prologue.
Prologue, thank you. Okay. Prologue.
That's how we say it in Baltimore.
No, we go prologue.
Prologue. No, we can't start. We cannot. I'll never stop.
I thought it was pierogi.
That too.
In the church. Oh boy. Oh, we're starting off so good.
I told you
the
first two sentences were great.
Yeah. Okay. A victim for the sacrifice. At last, the boy understood what they wanted him for. The church was old. It stood at the edge of the tiny, run-down town, like a cathedral built in defiance of wind and dust, held fast by weed-choked desert and desperate night. Fuck, I love it.
Poetry.
The boy... Poetry. The boy had spotted it from 2 miles away, the black silhouette of it crowning... Of its crowning cross and of the black... I'm so sorry. I can't read already. The black silhouette of its crowning cross, an outstretched hand of asylum pulling him toward it with pounding heart and weeping eyes. I'm sorry, did you just say poetry, Chris?
Yes.
Yeah. He needed a place to hide. They were coming. He could feel them coming.
Gross.
Yet the boy hesitated as he neared the top of the stone steps, his dry gasping breath, a hurricane in his ears. It was late. He didn't know if the church was open, and suddenly he couldn't bear the possibility that it might not be open. He thought that if he pulled on the door handle and it didn't budge, he'd begin to sob uncontrollably, or worse yet, begin to scream at the top of his lungs so that they would know.
I felt like that the whole last week, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
For no reason.
So that they would know where he was.
Then it would finally be over. He wanted it to be over. But that didn't mean he wanted to die. Not their way. He had no choice. The people of the nearby town could not help him, even if they would open their doors to him. Only God could help him. He reached for the handle. Oh, sweet Jesus, please, he said. It opened.
I said the same thing reading.
Sweet Jesus, help me. It opened. Relief and cool air washed over him as he stepped inside. He smelled the wax of burning candles, sensed the silence of years of whispered prayers.
God damn.
I love you, Christopher Pike. Inside was almost as dark as outside. If not for the candles illuminating the altar, he would have stumbled on the vase of holy water set on top of a low pillar beside the doorway. He touched the water with the tip of his fingers as he tried vainly to moisten his cracked lips and... with his bone-dry tongue.
Wait, with holy water?
He touched the water with the tip. So he's, like, touching the water and also licking his lips separately.
This is how it
These
works.
Are separate actions.
I thought he was dipping his hands in the holy water, and
he's
like,
sucking,
help me, Jesus.
He's sucking the water through his body from the tips of his fingers into his lips and tongue.
That's skins.
That's what's happening. He needed a drink in the worst way, but was reluctant to bend over and satisfy his thirst. The thought of germs didn't deter him. It was the fear of committing a blasphemy, especially now when he could ill afford to offend anybody.
But he can stick his dirty mitts in there. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, just dip your fingies in, but don't drink it. He blessed himself quickly and moved further into the church. The place was all but deserted. Only one old lady in black sat in a pew, and she stood quickly as he entered, throwing him a furtive glance and tightening her shawl over her hunched shoulders before disappearing into a wooden confessional booth built into the stone wall on the right side of the church.
Remember that lady.
Oh my god.
This is great having lady. Someone that's read it before.
I know, I love having the inside track.
Yeah.
She never comes back, but I just wanted you to remember her.
Just remember her.
No character wants to be forgotten, no matter how lame they are.
Yeah. She was there being furtive.
Even before you said that, I was like, is she important?
Yeah, like, is she the priest?
I ruin movies for everybody, too. I'll give him an elbow and go, watch this, watch this.
He'll never believe
it
happens.
And then nothing happens.
There had to be a priest in the booth listening to confessions.
To the right of the main altar was a smaller shrine to the Virgin Mary. He had not been to church in years, but he remembered that Mother Mary was supposed to be especially good at protecting those in danger.
Is that true? You're Catholic?
I honestly don't know.
Okay, I don't know why I bothered asking you. You're a terrible Catholic.
Yes, I was raised Catholic and don't remember a single thing.
Okay.
Hurrying up the central aisle, he genuflected before the statue of the Madonna.
I know what that is.
He decided to say a prayer, or like a prayer.
Okay. This is all a Madonna album. A prayer, like a virgin. God.
If Madonna had made an album based off a Christopher Pike book, it would have been the best thing.
It's not too late. She can still do it.
The Virgin had dozens of tiny candles burning at her feet already, their flames flickering drunkenly in small blue and red dishes above the flood of their own melted wax. The tiny flames irritated his already moist eyes, and he had to pull a handkerchief from his pocket to stop the tears
dry
from pouring
mouth,
over his cheeks.
Wet eyes.
Yeah, that's where all the moisture is.
Dry fingers.
He needs a still suit.
A tarnished silver donation box sat to the side on the shrine. One was supposed to put something in it before lighting a candle, he recalled, and he searched pants for change. He came up with 2 quarters, but before he slipped them in the box, he hesitated once more. To call the police, he would need at least 1 quarter, if not both of them. It would be foolish to throw away his money like this.
Okay. I was pretty young in 1989,
yes.
But I thought you could call the police for free.
Oh. Yeah. Wouldn't 911 be free? Like, that's...
Isn't 911...
I don't remember ever dialing 911 from a payphone.
I did not dial 911 when I was 3 years old,
but
so
I
don't know.
I'm just impressed you remembered payphones.
<Yeah. laughs> We had a payphone in my high school.
911 works on payphones because I accidentally did it at an Olive Garden when I was a child.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
And
I
need to know.
Red sticks! We need red sticks!
It was just taking a long time to wait for a table.
They told me that when I'm here I'm family, but that's not true! None of these are my family.
It was taking a long time to wait for a table, so I just went up to the payphone and was just like, 911, and then I hung up. But the call still went through and the police showed up.
Yeah,
oh,
man,
and,
that's
I got
what they
in a
do.
Lot of trouble for it.
That's awesome.
And,
wait,
okay.
The police showed up to the Olive Garden? I was writing notes, so I wasn't listening.
Yeah, they respond to every call.
A child called the police at Olive Garden, and they were like, they have to respond.
Jesus.
And, well, like, before it even rang, I hung up, but apparently they're like, well, maybe it's something serious.
They'll show up harder, I think, when that happens, because they're like, oh, they can't even talk to us.
And now you just fessed up, Chris.
Well, no, I got in trouble
that day. Wait a minute, there's somebody knocking on your door, Chris.
It was like, nope, it was just a giant-headed child fooling around, impatient, waiting for a table.
Waiting for breadsticks.
All right, scroll down, please.
Beep.
Then he remembered what he had seen, what he had heard with his own ears and felt with his two hands. He hastily slipped the money in the box and reached for the stick to light his candle. Unfortunately, he couldn't get the thing to light. He couldn't get the wick to stand still. It kept moving, and he became angry with it until he realized it was his hands that were trembling. He had to grab his right wrist with his left palm to steady his hands sufficiently to make contact with the wick.
Jesus.
His candle lit. The boy turned his eyes up to the Virgin.
She was beautiful, and the sight of her soft face momentarily allowed him to blot out the horror of what was in his mind. He began to pray. Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners now and at the time of our death. Amen.
They got that right.
He repeated the prayer a dozen times, then another dozen. and at the end, felt somewhat better. Well, yeah, it was 6 hours later.
That's he did a whole rosary.
He left the shrine for...
How many are on a rosary?
There's a lot on a rosary. I don't... There's also like 10, like, I don't know, not 10. There's like 5 different prayers you gotta say, because each bead is a different one.
Oh, I thought it was all the same one. I thought it was just that
one. I think all the little ones are Hail Marys, and then the big ones are maybe Our Fathers, and then like there's a big chunky one, and then a different one.
Oh.
There's multiple ones.
And listen, kids, don't do drugs. says.
But also, if you do drugs, don't tell a priest.
Yes, and don't tell Mr. T.
Because they'll make you do the rosary.
He left the shrine for a seat in the pew near the rear of the church. Needed to sit down to rest, and he wanted to be near the door in case anyone approached. But he wondered if he had, in fact, been followed, if he wasn't just imagining things. He had to ask himself if they would dare enter a church, if they wouldn't explode in flames at the sight of a crucifix.
Are there vampires?
The idea of being in a... No. The idea of being in a divinely protected place, if that were the case, this book would make so much sense. The idea of being in a divinely protected place gave him some comfort still. His hands continued to tremble. I lied about the old lady. The old lady in black was in the confessional booth a long time. When she came out, she did not kneel to do her penance.
Oh, shit.
Quick glance at him. And she headed for the door. He tried to smile as she passed, but she lowered her wrinkled face and frowned. He must look like hell. The moment she was gone, he stood and strode into the confessional booth. Priest must have been anxious to leave. The boy thought he heard the father sigh as he opened the door to the booth and sat down inside. Of course, the boy could not be sure. The priest sat on the other side of a translucent screen of woven cloth that rendered him an ill-defined shadow beneath the dim overhead light.
The priest is like, oh, great, I get to hear about another wet dream.
The boy didn't know if he was happy or sad that the priest couldn't see him, and vice versa. Okay.
Did he not know that was the deal?
I don't know. I don't know what this kid's deal is. He decided it didn't matter, as long as the priest would listen to him and not demand that he leave. I don't think priests usually do that. One thing for sure, the boy was not happy about the interior of the booth. It was poorly lit. Cramped.
I do not like the accommodations. I paid 50 cents to be here.
I have some notes about your confessional.
I can't see the nothing that's in here.
Am I supposed to kneel? It was poorly lit, cramped, a claustrophobic nightmare. The wood of the small seat was not merely hard. His backside seemed to bruise just sitting on it. I can confirm that's pretty accurate.
But he's seen horrors.
I know.
Can you imagine? I know. Like, and his butt's a little sore.
And he's bitching about his butt. Yeah.
My butt hurts. It was only with the greatest effort that he was able to shut the door to the booth. He could have been shutting the lid to his own coffin. Right away, he began to have trouble breathing and had to fight to calm himself.
Yes!
The priest said after a minute when the boy had not spoken.
Oh, dude, you're gonna kill your voice before the end of this.
Oh, the priest had a Spanish accent that I won't do, which was no wonder. The church wasn't far from the Mexican border. I was wondering where the fuck this book took place. The priest also sounded old.
On which
ooh,
side
I
of the
one.
Border?
Oh, good question. And the boy hoped that was good. He coughed once and began to speak. Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. It has been years since my last confession. These are my sins. He took a breath. I've killed someone.
Damn.
What?
The priest asked, startled. I killed someone. The priest paused.
Are you serious?
Yes, Father. I'm very serious. His tone must have been convincing. The priest leaned forward behind the screen. The boy could actually feel his breath on his own face. Ugh. The priest's breath? Yeah.
Ew.
The priest had alcohol with his dinner.
How old are you, son?
The priest asked slowly. 18.
Well, that's old enough to murder.
Old enough.
So the law says it's fine.
Yeah.
Who did you kill? I can't say. I don't know. I mean, I do know, but it's not important. It's not important? It's the least of my problems right now, the boy thought. Yet he quickly wondered if that were true. There might be a pattern of cause and effect in what was happening to him. But he doubted that a logical analysis was going to give it to him. Not unless he started with the assumption that he was home in bed having a nightmare. He shifted uneasily in the compact cubicle, his right elbow bumping the chipped adobe wall on his right, the orange dust staining his already filthy shirt. It looked as if Spanish conquistadors might have erected the church hundreds of years ago. Suddenly, the boy didn't feel so well hidden as he felt trapped. The priest was waiting for him to continue. It's not why I'm here, the boy said. I'll explain in a minute, but first I need to ask you something. Do you believe in the devil?
Wait.
I'm a priest.
Yeah, I know. Like,
that's literally what it says in the book, though, and I love that.
Yup.
I'm a priest. I know you're a priest, but a lot of priests these days, they say the devil is just symbolic and stuff like that. Like out of the Middle Ages, you know?
A lot of these, like, the cool, like early 90s priests,
cool
like,
hip
that are
priests.
Like, hey.
Yeah.
Like, hey.
They say check this out a lot.
Yeah. The devil's just an allegory, and he turns his chair around and sits on it.
I was at the mall the other day, and I saw a couple of young people.
Why are you asking this? Because it's important. I need to know. I believe in the devil, the priest said. Good. The priest spoke gently. What is your problem, son? I'll finish this page. Okay. The boy couldn't control them. The tears simply gushed out. He had to reach for his handkerchief once more. I'm so afraid. Tell me. The boy began to tell him.
I already forgot that that was a prologue.
Yes.
So it is, okay, is that like a flash forward?
Yes.
I'm guessing, yeah.
Okay. I was like, okay, so either this is like, you know, the last victim, and then we're going to like go into like the next victim, or it's one of those like, you know, 2 weeks earlier.
Yeah.
You're speculating when Clint's right there. You could just ask him.
You would think that, Jonathan.
Yeah.
Okay.
We'll see.
However, Clint has already proven to be a liar.
I will tell you this.
Got your copy.
I thought it was kind of a cute idea, the prologue and the unidentified kid. The thing is, you don't even get through chapter one without figuring out who the kid was. That mystery is completely gone.
I believe in the first sentence.
There you go.
All right. Chapter one. Carl Timmons.
That's him.
The aforementioned boy had a dream the morning of the scavenger hunt. It was the same dream he'd had on and off for the last year, and it was different. So was it the same or was it different?
No, yeah. It was the same but different, Chris.
Yeah.
But it began...
Same but different.
What aren't you following?
But it began as it usually did. And, as always, everything that happened felt as if it were happening for the first time. He was with his best friend, Joe, and the two of them were kids again. Mm-hmm. They were riding tricycles. Why did I struggle with tricycles?
I don't know, but
up
I really enjoyed it.
I thought
gully.
You did that on purpose.
Tricycles up a dusty gully. Overhead, the sky...
I like dusty gully.
Yeah. It was a wrestler, wasn't he?
Overhead, the sky was clear and the day was bright. They were having a great time, playing in the big outdoors together without a care in the world.
Just like some 80s kids.
Remember life before
Back
the internet?
Back in the day when I went outside?
Yeah. When you just like drove your tricycle into a dusty gully?
Remember life before helicopter parents? Three-year-old kids. We're just riding down the gully.
Up ahead of them, at the end of the gully, the dusty gully, was a huge dam. Joe understood the whole concept of the dam pretty well. It was a word he could say around his parents, but sometimes not allowed to say around his parents. He said there must be a lot of water on the other side
it's
of it.
Not much of a concept.
Maybe a lake, but Carl couldn't imagine it. On their side of the dam, everything was so dry and dusty. Carl thought there was probably just more of the same on the other side, or maybe nothing at all. Actually, this was before he understood object permanence. In reality, he didn't much care what was there.
Wait, what was his friend's name?
Joe?
Okay.
But Joe liked to talk about it as they rode along. The subject of dams interested him greatly.
Wow.
Which we've proven. Yeah. They were riding for quite some time and didn't notice that the sky had begun to darken. Black clouds swept over their heads, blotting out the last traces of sunlight. Lightning and thunder followed, and it began to rain. But not on them. Only behind the dam. They could see the rain from a distance, coming down like a beaded curtain. Joe said they should go back right then. He was afraid that the dam would overflow, maybe even break, but Carl didn't fear. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do that. Carl didn't feel the least fear. The dam was big, strong, he thought. He didn't see how a little rain could possibly bring it down. And now he had a change of heart. Wow, that was like half a sentence. Yeah. He wanted to peek on the other side to see with his own eyes if there really was a lake there, to see if Joe was right and he was wrong. He insisted they ride on, thus ensuring his doom. I added that last part.
These kids really don't understand dams, even though one of them said they do.
I know.
I want to know which one of the, what three-year-old understands hydroelectric construction? Yeah. It's just... They hadn't gone far when a thick bolt of lightning cracked the sky directly above them, accompanied by a deafening clap of thunder. A putrid smell filled the air. Not the usual ozone smell lightning brought, but the odor burnt flesh.
Dang.
And then it began to rain on them. The ground turned to mud. Carl quickly changed his mind about the dam. Now he was as scared as Joe. They turned the tricycles around and started pedaling like mad. Then the thing fell out of the sky. They didn't see it. They had their backs to the dam, and with the thick rain, it was hard to keep their eyes clear, but they heard it. The thing fell behind the dam, and the crash of its landing was louder than the thunder had been. The bad smell worsened, and they pedaled harder. Carl was afraid to look around, but he did look. Finally, when his wheels began to sink deep into the mud, and his burning lungs began to fail, and he felt he could not go on.
Jesus.
Clint, you're really good at this.
This is a lot for children to go through. I'm so upset for them.
And first of all, you are really good at this. And also, like, confirming me and Becca were like, he's going to be amazing at this.
Yeah. Hey, I have a lot of grandkids. I read to them all the time. not Christopher Pike, but.
Oh, God.
Well, maybe you should start.
Maybe I should.
Start with the Eternal Enemy.
Yeah.
Teach them about dams.
This was where things changed, although in this particular nightmare, on this particular morning, Carl only sensed the change without understanding it. Ordinarily in his dream, he would see cracks forming in the dam with ribbons of water spouting out. This would, in fact, usually be the end of the dream, although occasionally the dam would actually break and a cascade of water would pour down on him and Joe, and he would wake up screaming. Jesus Christ.
Oh, brace yourself.
This time, the cracks were present, but look, when we're reading Christopher Pike, all I am is braced.
Okay. Strap in, baby.
Oh, boy.
My computer chair has a seatbelt.
This time, the cracks were present, but the spouting water was not exactly water. It had a red tinge to it.
Like blood?
And he thought the thing that had fallen into the water behind the dam must be bleeding. He froze for a moment, staring at the gook, knowing full well that the thing must have been huge to have darkened the entire lake. He was a believer in the lake by this time.
Why was he a skeptic about the presence of a lake?
That's what I'm saying! Like,
some say there's a lake there.
Some say, is that?
But I don't believe it.
Is that a dam over there? Some say there's a lake behind that dam.
Nope, I think it's dry. I think the water starts at the dam.
Others say
there's nothing behind it.
Others say it's just a big fucking wall.
Used to be a highlife fonton here, and they used to play all the time.
Some say they built the dam and never finished it and filled it with water.
It's just a wall that cries. Everything behind it is dry.
And cries blood.
It's a wall that cries. Holy shit. He was a believer in the lake by this time.
What a sentence.
I love it. Joe was pulling on Carl's shirt and screaming that they had to keep going. Carl could barely move. He was so scared. The bloody water caught up with them and began to flow around the tires of their tricycles and over their feet, staining their pants. Carl finally bore down and got his wheel moving again. Joe was stronger. He pulled several feet ahead of him, but continued to shout back frantic words of encouragement. Joe was in such a hurry to get away from the dam that he didn't pay enough attention to where he was going. The gully was fairly wide. Joe was bearing to the left, near the steep mud wall. At the moment, riding up the wall of the gully was out of the question, but they both knew that farther along the walls would level out and they would be able to escape. Oh god, I feel like I'm reading a math problem.
I don't really know what a gully is. I thought I knew, but I don't. Is it like a bowl?
Ditch. Like a big ditch.
Like a big ditch, okay.
Yeah, like a big natural sides, ditch.
Right?
Or a gulch.
Okay.
It could be a gulch.
I guess what's the difference between a gully and a gulch?
You're going to have to Google that one. Two letters. I don't even know what a gully is.
L-Y-C-H.
Is anyone else upset that we don't hear the words of encouragement? Like, hey, buddy, you got this. You can outpedal the wall of blood.
Oh, Chris, you've stumbled on a major plot thread. Read on!
I thought you were going to say, is anyone else disappointed that we don't hear the word gulch more often? Uh-huh. Because that's how I feel. Oh, guys, according to Google, a gulch is generally larger than a gully and has more defined shape.
Okay, so a gully is a baby gulch.
Can you do an image search? I need help.
Sure,
I need visual help.
Yeah.
With this descriptive power before your very eyes?
Yeah. All I know is there's blood and babies on tricycles.
Okay, so a gulch is like a...
That's the episode title, by the way.
What are those things called?
The Red Rocks stuff? Yeah. That's a gulch?
Okay. That's what Google says a gulch is.
You said Google like a Baltimorean.
God damn it.
All right, we must move on. The problem was they weren't going to have the chance to get much farther. Their tricycles weren't very fast. I'm trying not to go on a tangent about tricycles, but I have to at this point. I don't remember ever riding a tricycle. I feel like those are for actual babies. I feel like we had like one of those little like pedal cars. It was like a shitty little car that had like metal things that you pedaled.
Yes.
And then we just went from that to like a bike with training wheels. I never did a tricycle.
Oh my god, you're right. Wait.
Well, I mean, I'm right about my own childhood.
No, yours could be different. But I wasn't even thinking.
You were like, there for mine.
How? Not that you know.
That's upsetting.
How? 2 years older than you. Tricycles. Another child.
I'm picturing like 3 year olds.
Yeah. Wait. How old are they in this dream?
Three.
Wait, for real?
Wow.
Yeah, did you not remember back there? They said were three and they were riding tricycles.
I missed that.
They're at the age where they still have to pedal, and then eventually you graduate to putting your feet on the back part and then pushing.
I know that this is a dream, but like...
I just feel like you...
No latchkey parent would let a three-year-old out, right?
It was the... well...
Oh. Right.
Oh, it was the 80s, but I was three in 89, and I definitely was not out in a fucking gully on a tricycle.
I was definitely not allowed out in a...
neighborhood.
In a rainy gully. Yeah. Okay.
Our problem was that we weren't born west enough.
Yeah, I guess. The tricycles weren't very fast, and Carl only had to look over his shoulder to know that the tiny cracks in the dam were growing bigger and fatter. The red water started to swim over his pedals. The only hope, as Carl saw it, was to head for a small hill several yards to the side of the right embankment. Carl called out to Joe, trying to communicate his idea.
I truly do not mean to go off on, like, another tangent, but, like, can three-year-olds articulate that much? Because we don't have kids.
Dream of an 18-year-old.
That's true. I keep forgetting that it's, like, a dream and there's dream logic. Okay.
Yeah, you do. You do keep forgetting.
I do keep forgetting.
And remember, this is where Christopher so brilliantly posited that this is where the dream diverged from what he remembered in the past. Plot thread, Chris.
You're just like, you're like foreshadowing Incarnate.
Yeah. Our Ghost of Christmas Future.
Yes!
Foreshadowing such Horseshit. Okay, go on.
Joe couldn't hear him, and Carl didn't know what to do. He could go after Joe, get close enough to tell him his plan, and risk getting swept away himself, or else he could ride straight for the hill. He really did care for Joe. They were best friends. But he honestly didn't think he could get to Joe in time. Damn!
Damn! Carl, no, that's behind him!
He really did care for him.
The rain was coming down too hard. He was too tired. And fuck Joe a little, I guess. He didn't want to die. He turned the wheel of his tricycle toward the right embankment. The sides of the hill in the middle of the gully were not so steep as the walls of the gully. What? I'm lost.
I don't know.
There are slopes. It kind of slopes up at these points. That's what he saw.
There's slopes and then walls. Okay. Several times Carl pedaled up 2 feet only to slip back 3. Finally, though, he reached the top of the mound and was able to pause and catch his breath. It was only then that he realized Joe was as good as done for.
Damn.
The dam was coming apart and in huge chunks. We have to stop saying damn.
Damn.
And Joe was plowing through a shallow stream that was about to become a raging river. Joe! Carl screamed. Joe heard him this time. He stopped and glanced over his shoulder in time to watch a narrow splinter in the lower center of the dam split into a gaping red wound.
Gross. The right and left sides of the dam held only a moment before collapsing in an avalanche of foam. The lake swept toward them both. They were some distance from the dam. When the brunt of the wave hit the hill Carl stood on, it had leveled out enough to leave him untouched, for the moment. But it showed Joe no mercy. Carl saw Joe raise his hands in horror, cry out Carl's name before he was buried beneath the thunderous cascade. Joe's tricycle flipped into the air, and Carl caught a blur of his friend's legs and arms. Then Joe was gone.
Dismembered.
Yeah, just the legs and arms.
Just,
and
yeah.
Carl hung his head in sorrow. But matters were far from over. The hill he stood upon was eroding beneath the onslaught of the red flood. He had a minute, 2 at most, before the ground beneath him would collapse and he would be swept away. He knew he had that much time because he encounters this all the time. Yet the possibility of drowning was not what sent the fear deep into his heart. It was the thing he saw. The thing the lightning bolt had sent crashing down from the heavens. Burnt and bleeding, but not dead. Merely confined to the earth for a while. A thing that could never bleed to death.
I already forgot something fell.
It was a monster. It had a shape similar to a flying lizard from a time before man, and claws like a creature from the bottom of a cold sea.
What?
Was it a pterodactyl?
But it was neither. It was worse. It was from the outside. Okay, so Lovecraftian.
This is some Stephen King shit. Yeah.
Small and scared as he was, Carl could see that. He could see it in the thing's eyes. They were red and hot, and there were hard black dots in their centers that had no fathomable bottom, that led nowhere, and had no care except for its all-consuming hunger.
Jesus.
Who picks up a book called Scavenger Hunt?
Yes, this is what I was also
and
thinking.
On page 12, and they're like, so, like, is the Scavenger Hunt so starting like, yet?
What's on the list?
It was a monster that devoured...
I need a claw of the monster, and a scale of the monster, and the eye of the monster.
Blood from the dam.
Blood from the dam. Scrap of Joe's clothing.
Especially little boys, which it found particularly tasty. Riding the crest of its own bloody wave, it was heading straight for him. The phone woke Carl. He sat up with a start. His eyes snapped open. For an instant, he saw a face superimposed over the blue wall of his bedroom. It was not the face of the monster in his nightmare. It was a human face, and yet it was just as horrible. Somehow, it resembled the monster, and he recognized the face. But before he could call out the person's name, the image faded. Phone beside his bed rang a second time, and he reached for it, gazing at that poster of Mick Jagger on his wall. Hi, Carl. Did I wake you?
Oh, God.
Carl woke up in a hurry, pushing the dream aside. It was Ceci.
Ceci.
Someone he wouldn't have dared to call.
What?
No, I'm up, he said, trying to clear his throat with the words. How are you? Sessie giggled. Sexy Sessie.
Ew. What? I hate it.
She could giggle all day and a boy wouldn't mind.
I didn't wake you. I'm sorry, but we had to talk to you. The Partridge Club is having their scavenger hunt today. What? We wanted to get you on our team before someone else got you.
I knew there was a secret club, but Partridge Club is not the name I thought.
Yeah.
No, uh-uh.
I was thinking like a really cool underground club. Like,
yeah, like the Danger
what
Society.
What was that fucking
they just
movie?
Really want to come on and get happy.
What was
oh,
that movie with
one.
The secret club?
Thank you.
Joshua
Ruben
Jackson.
Would be very proud of
oh,
you.
Oh, the skeletons, the skulls,
yeah, the
skulls and bones are skulls.
Skull club, whatever skull club. It was, it doesn't matter.
Just you wait, my friends. Just you wait. Carl could not believe his luck. He had talked to Sessie many times during the year, and she had always been nice to him, but they had never gone beyond superficial chatter. He'd been wondering how he could gather the nerve to ask her out before school ended next week, and here she was, setting up the perfect opportunity. The hunt was supposed to last all day, and the team's to be small. That would be great, he said. Wonderful. Tom told me I could count on you. We went from killing a three-year-old to sexy Sessie in a heartbeat.
Yeah. Welcome to Christopher Pike.
This
oh, my God.
Is Christopher Pike.
He does not disappoint. He, oh, my God. Clint, we read a book. The last one, I think we, was it? No. It wasn't the last one.
No, we read the one with the writer.
The writer was the last one. We read a book called The Eternal Enemy, and spoiler alert, it's about a girl who...
Well, the premise of the book...
oh, yeah.
Which is, my favorite thing is the premise versus what actually happens. The premise was like a haunted VCR that could show you the future.
Yes.
But then what actually happens in the book is that there's a time-traveling teenage girl robot who forgets she's a robot and has a crush on her young grandfather.
Yes.
And it's horrifying.
The main character of that book turns out to be a robot from the future who came back in time to kill her grandfather and forgot about it and then falls in love with her grandfather.
Yes.
And the whole time we're like, wait, I thought it was a magic VCR.
Yeah.
This book makes that sound like the Bible.
I'm so excited.
You just wait.
Oh, my God.
Oh, shit, I'm so excited. Oh, my God. Sessie, I can't. Sessie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I understand.
Tom names a lot.
Yeah. Tom Barrett was a friend of his, probably his best friend. Now that Joe is dead.
Shit!
Yeah. In that damn accident.
Okay.
That
15,
damn accident.
15 years it took this guy to get a best friend.
Everyone heard what he did
to
fucking
Joe.
Joe.
He left Joe
behind in the mud.
Holy shit. I had a bad dream. I woke up from, I wouldn't call it a nightmare, but I woke up from a distressing dream this morning where just like a lady was chasing me down the street with a razor blade. And like,
you
that
on a
was,
tricycle?
She would, no, but no, like reading this, I'm just like, damn, I got it easy.
Yeah.
I didn't dream about a blood dam. Tom talked to Sessie regularly, although he'd never shown a romantic interest in her. Sessie went on. Would you like to speak to him? He's at your house? Yes. He's sitting here on the deck of the pool watching me swim. Sessie
buckle
giggled.
In.
Is she calling from the pool?
No. Keep going. Don't stop.
Sessie giggled again. I'm naked.
Oh, my God. Sessie.
Sessie. Sexy Sessie. Always naked.
So you don't
naked.
Have a pool phone?
Yeah, everyone's got a pool phone. Everyone who matters. Sounds like fun, Carl.
Yeah, go it. Go
Carl
for it.
Carl, what now?
Go
just
on.
That sounds like fun. Carl wished he could see through his friend's eyes. Sure, put Tom on. I'll see you at school. You'll see me before then, Carl. He heard a loud splash and then started to get excited.
Yeah, started.
Started. He continued to be excited. Tom came on the line. Sure did.
How's it going, buddy?
He asked.
All right,
Carl said. I haven't got out of bed yet. I'm for some reason, I'm picturing Carl now, currently, as Cameron from Ferris Bueller.
Well, I kept picturing Same. Carl from Caddyshack, so I kept thinking, hey, how's it going, buddy?
Oh, God.
Cinderella story, guy picturing a naked girl in the pool.
That scans. How are you? It was the usual mundane question to ask that we all have to do Monday morning. But because it was Tom, Carl listened closely for the answer. Tom had been hit...
Yeah.
Tom had been hit hard in the head during a football game last what? Fall. The blow had knocked him out cold for 15 solid minutes.
Wow. Oh my
God. The doctor said he was all right. He still did well in school and all that, but he had a tendency to fall silent for long periods and to wander off.
He definitely, died and saw the other side and came back and is haunted.
Yep.
Maybe Tom should have this voice, eh?
Oh my God, Tom.
I love how fast these books get off, topic. I don't know. Yeah. It's so good. Carl knew he was overprotective of him, his simple-minded football friend, but felt that should be the worst of his
but
fault.
Yes, Sessie's like, you can see my titties, it's fine. I don't care about your traumatic brain injury. It's 9 a.m.
You won't remember.
Yeah.
It didn't bother him that Tom was with Sessie and he wasn't, because of the brain injury.
Yeah.
Well, it didn't bother him much.
I'm the same,
Tom said.
There's the voice.
Yeah. Is that good or bad? Carl asked.
I don't know.
What are you doing at Sessie's house?
Hanging out. I don't do voices, by the way.
Yeah, Megan does not do voices.
It's probably keeping you out of trouble.
Yeah. Is she really swimming naked? I think so. You want to give us a ride to school? Who can tell under all that water, You want me to come get you?
Ask me 1 year ago and I can tell you.
Yeah. If you can, Tom said. No problem. Did you talk Sessie into asking me to be in her group for the scavenger hunt? We should all be together. Are you in the group too? Carl asked. Yeah. Great. See you soon. All right, Tom said. Goodbye.
Typical guy conversation on the phone.
Yeah. It really is, though, yeah.
Yeah.
Huh? What? Yeah.
Yeah. Goodbye.
Carl said so long and set the phone down. It was only then he realized that his shirt was soaked with sweat. The nightmare came back to him in a rush. Yet he couldn't really remember it all, except that it had been different from the usual one. There had been a dragon or a snake at the end. Boy, he must be losing it. The blasted thing had scared the hell out of him.
What?
Nah, I'm not adding anything. You really don't need to sometimes.
What is he, Doc Savage?
Nobody is Doc Savage.
The man
you
of
watch
bronze.
Your mouth, mister.
Carl didn't spend much energy analyzing the dream. He'd done that many times before, and Freud's worst pupil could have solved the riddle in a minute. The last summer, he'd gone for a hike with Joe Travers deep into the desert.
Yeah.
The weather had been fine when they'd set out. His last name's Travers, I guess.
Okay. And this is last summer?
Yeah.
Last
summer.
Well, was it last summer or
the last summer?
Just
yeah.
keep going. Just keep
okay.
going.
Okay. The last summer, he'd gone for a hike with Joe Travers deep into the desert. The weather had been fine when they'd set out, but late the first night, a storm had caught them unawares. People had trouble believing him to this day, but Carl swore the sky dropped 6 inches on them in less than 30 minutes. It was like being caught in a hurricane in the middle of the Bermuda Triangle. They were trying to cross through a gully, fucking gully, to get to shelter when an old beaver's dam or something farther up the gully must have broken and a flood came down on them and washed Joe away.
Damn.
Also, the new best friend should sound like Keanu.
Okay.
I feel like that's safe.
Sure, that works. Yeah, that works. We've done that before.
Carl barely made it to safety on the other side. He tried to save Joe. He dived in and swam after him. He even split his side open on a boulder trying. But even though the flood was fierce, he didn't honestly think Joe would drown. They were in the middle of the desert, for Christ's sakes.
Who drowns in a desert?
Who
drowns in a desert? Who drowns in a desert?
But that's why like, water sits on top of dry dirt because there's not water underneath to help absorb it.
Yeah.
So roots, it just rests on top. Well, that is like the only thing I know about science.
Well, that's, I was going to say, when I looked at the pictures of gullies and I saw those pictures, I'm like, I always thought they were called canyons or, you know, whatever. But like, the whole thing is, if you feel rain, you get the fuck out.
Get the fuck out of the gully.
Get the fuck out, because you're going to die soon.
Baby Gulch, baby Gulch.
Oh, please.
Anyway.
God. Okay.
But Joe did drown or smother, and that was a fact.
What?
Although they didn't find his body until a few months later.
Isn't drowning just smothering by water?
Yes.
That scientists would say yes.
The flood had buried him beneath a pile of dirt and dead shrubs, and the insects and the weather had gotten to him by the time a ranger stumbled across his fleshless finger, pointing through the sun-baked mud at the blazing sky.
My God.
It's like, fuck you, clouds. You're the one that did this to me.
Which finger was it?
Pinky. It was the pinky. He was drinking a cup of tea when he was smothered.
Going down with a sense of style.
Proper to the end.
Yeah.
All that remained was a skeleton. But the coroner said it was Joe. No question.
The coroner is also like, it's definitely Carl's fault.
So Carl had his nightmares and didn't have to wonder why. Yet he continued to ask himself why the flood had just happened to come down upon them the instant they climbed into the gully. There weren't any beavers or beaver dams in the desert. There was nothing but sand and lizards.
Did not occur to me that there wouldn't be fucking desert beavers.
Desert beavers.
Did not occur to me.
Yeah.
Carl climbed out of bed and went into the bathroom and took a cold shower. The sizzling sun through his bedroom window had already told him that it was going to be hot. When he had, what a time when you couldn't look up the weather before you even left bed.
When I couldn't ask my robot speaker to tell me what the weather was outside.
When he had finished washing and was dressed, he stopped by the kitchen for something to eat. He doubted he'd find anything. His dad drove a truck long distance and hadn't been home in a week. He didn't know what his mom did, but she hadn't been home in 8 years.
What?
She'd sent money at Christmas, though, a few $100 each time. He figured she must be doing all right.
Okay.
He had a liberal family life. He stayed out of his dad's way, and his dad stayed out of his, and they got along fine.
Wow.
Yeah, that sounds fine.
He took care of himself. He didn't need his mother's money. He worked as a mechanic at a local gas station and was good at his job, but he couldn't remember when he had last bought food. Lately, he hadn't been feeling all that hungry. There was a black banana in the refrigerator. He almost threw it away, but ended up eating the parts that looked serviceable.
Ew.
Carl!
It's just a dude being a dude.
What are you doing with
that?
What
some Pop-Tarts.
Food? What is he, Mark?
Then he found a box of crackers in a cupboard. He was munching on those with the help of a glass of water. Apparently has his water to his chewing form when he noticed the message light blinking on the answering machine.
That's how you know the book is old.
His dad had bought the machine for business reasons. All truck drivers do. It was the newest thing in the house and one of the most expensive. It cost $100.
That's incredible.
Carl rewound the tape.
Dollars in today's money.
It's true, yeah.
Rewound the tape, lowered the volume. The messages his dad's pals left usually contained a minimum of 10 obscene words.
Mm-hmm. And he didn't want the no one else to hear them?
Especially if he said damn.
Yeah.
No way.
That's a very triggering word for Carl.
Hi, Carl. This is Tracy White. I hope I'm not calling too late. It's 10:15 Thursday night. The reason I'm calling, I was wondering if you wanted to be in our group for the scavenger hunt. We're going to have Rick and Paula and myself. We think you could really help us out. Give me a call if you can. My number is 555-9372.
Wow.
867-5349. Take care and hope to talk to you soon.
That's a very business-like call for what I'm assuming is a high school girl to leave.
Yeah.
And wait till you... Well, okay. We're about to get into it.
Yeah. Tell me more about Tracy.
Carl smiled at the message.
Oh.
Tracy was a good kid.
She's a good kid.
He'd had a crush on her when they were freshmen. She was a slender redhead with cute freckles and a smile as sweet as they made them.
Adorable.
When they first met at the beginning of high school, he thought they'd become good friends.
But they drifted apart, and now seldom talked. He wasn't sure what had happened. He still had a soft spot for her, though. She had an enthusiastic little girl quality about her that was infectious. At least she used to have that quality. The last few times they talked, she was kind of quiet. He must not be the only one going through hard times. He definitely had to make time to take her to a movie or dinner. If she'd go with him. He'd heard she'd won a scholarship to a college up north. Express wasn't a town that kept its young people. He lives in a town called Express?
Yup.
Okay.
Okay. That's news to me. Okay. Express.
You know what the delivery company in that town is?
Express. You'll get it, but when we feel like it. Express wasn't a town that kept its young people. It was too small and too hot. Soon, Tracy would be moving in higher circles than he was accustomed to. But today was not the day to get together with Tracy. The Paula mentioned in the message was Tracy's best friend, Paula Morrow. And, by unfortunate coincidence, she had also been Joe Travers's girlfriend.
Dun, dun, dun!
Oh, God.
Carl realized he was knee-deep in exposition, but he had to keep going.
He avoided her whenever possible. He wasn't sure, but suspected Paula blamed him for Joe's death along with the rest of the entire population of Express. That was understandable. It had been his idea to go for the trip into the desert gully. On the other hand, he hadn't exactly dragged Joe along. He guessed everybody needed someone to blame. It was also weird that two teenagers still insisted on driving tricycles.
That's what's weird.
Yeah. Maybe if they were on
no
bicycles.
No wonder they were going so slow. Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Maybe if they were on bicycles, they could have gone faster. Yeah. Anyway, he couldn't be on Tracy's team when he was on Sessie's.
Tracy did get her call in first.
That's true.
She time stamped the voicemail.
That's true.
And I respect it.
That's true.
Point along.
Hang on. Sessie is sexy.
And naked.
She's naked at
7 in the morning.
With a concussion.
In front of another boy.
Boy, yeah.
I just thought he asked if she was naked, and he's just like, I think so.
Yes.
That is so alarming.
Get that boy help.
Oh my God. If you ask that to a teenage boy and he says, I think so, be like, oh, go to the hospital. He might have had a crush on Tracy once, but they hadn't come up with a word for the way he felt. They hadn't come up with a word for the way he felt about Cecilia Stepford.
Illegal, maybe.
Love or lust didn't say it. He just wanted her, and he wanted her bad.
That's called lust.
That's 100% lust.
I think we nailed that one.
I think we call it lust. Christopher Pike, you got it in the second try. Tracy might have called after he had gone to bed last night. Becca. He decided not to call her back. He'd see her at school and tell her he was already taken. He put away his crackers and went outside and climbed into his truck.
Remember those crackers.
it's so sad. He's like,
that old lady will show up with them later.
I work at the gas. I feel like he should be James Vanderbeek from Varsity Blues because he's like, I work at the gas station. I had a black banana and some crackers this morning.
I was thinking Rob Lowe, but Rob Lowe as he is now.
Delightful, you mean?
Yeah, sure, we'll go with that.
Express was a nothing town. It had roads and buildings and a population of 20,000. But when Carl drove around it, he was reminded of the millions of cities listed on a map of the U.S. All those meaningless names and places that just turned to a gray blur if you held the map out a couple of feet. He needed glasses. It didn't make any difference that he'd lived in Express all his life. It wasn't home to him. Sometimes he wondered if he'd ever find a place that felt like home.
No.
Fuck.
Oh, damn.
That's bleak. Express was located 80 miles inland from San Diego, 40 miles north of the Mexican border.
Okay. Finally, I know where we are.
Okay, so we're inland and we're up. Okay. besides the scorching heat, Express had smog.
That's California, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
San Diego? Yes.
Well, yeah. I'm just like, what's like, is it like New Mexico? But no, it would be just California.
I don't know things. I don't know how far 80 miles is.
It's real southwest.
California could be 80 miles from us, for as far as I know. I know it's not, but I really am bad with that sub. Besides the scorching heat, Express had smog. God only knew where it came from. May through September,
LA.
The town and its people hardly moved. What would that have to do with smog?
It was really bad back then in LA.
But what does it have to do with people moving?
Away from the smog? I don't know.
It doesn't matter. I don't know. I don't know. Mr. Partridge's club members...
Now it all clicks into place.
I'm already confused that I'm four words into the sentence. Mr. Partridge's club members must have strained their imaginations planning the promised scavenger hunt through the all but deserted streets of Express. Okay, so Partridge Club founded by Mr. Partridge.
Is he a teacher?
We'll find out.
Okay.
Carl could see them searching for lifesavers in the Rexall drugs and 3/4-inch screws in Headley's hardware. More than that, he couldn't imagine. He wasn't even sure what the grand prize was supposed to be. Ceci lived in an area of town referred to as the Mountains, a creative name for a portion of Express where the ground sloped upward 100 feet and a herd of eucalyptus trees had gathered. It was where the well-to-do resided, up on the hill, above everyone
else. Yes, of course, so they could look down on you.
Yeah.
Yes.
On the way there, thinking of Ceci swimming naked in her pool and nudging his truck toward a red light that didn't have the good sense to turn green, Carl almost ran over Paula Morrow's younger brother, the esteemed Richard Morrow.
Oh, my God. I want to...
Quick tangent. Your aunt and uncle named Rick and Paula?
Michael and Paula.
Okay. Yeah. I had it wrong.
I just want to check real quick. Mm-hmm. I was doing a time check, so we're at 8:03 and I was going to say, are you cool to just like finish
I'm
this
cool.
chapter?
I'm cool. Hang on for about a few more minutes. Yeah.
Okay. We got 10 more pages of this chapter. I just want to check if that's okay.
Let's do it.
Cool. Let's right. do
Thank
it.
You. Yeah.
Because I have to see your faces.
very, very soon.
Oh, I appreciate it. Oh, I'm so excited. Oh my gosh,
this gets so much worse.
I already am.
Paula Morrow's younger brother, the esteemed Richard Morrow. Hey! Rick shouted, bringing his wheelchair to an abrupt halt 3 feet short of the projected path of Carl's truck. Carl wouldn't really have hit him. Rick was overreacting, which Carl supposed was his right, since he was only 15 and about to graduate 3 years early and at the head of their class. Like, the guy can't walk, so he wants to upstage us other ways. Carl put his truck in neutral.
I don't think it's overreacting because he's smart to not get hit by a truck.
Yes.
I think even if you're not that smart, you don't want to get hit
by a truck. Carl has already gotten another child killed.
It gets so much worse, guys.
Oh, no.
Except for the two of them, the intersection was empty. Rick wheeled over to Carl's window. He was breathing heavily.
So awkward.
He had muscular dystrophy and had been handicapped since age 5.
Yeah, okay, good edit.
Oh, yeah, thank you, Chris.
Boy.
Were you going to run that light, you fucking dickhead? Rick asked. Probably. You didn't see me, did you? Nope, you were moving too fast. Rick put in his road work every morning. One day he said he was going to wheel his chair in the New York Marathon. Carl wished him well, but he didn't think highly of the handicap. But from the way Rick panted, completing his 1 mile course every morning, he doubted that Rick would be entering any marathon soon.
Carl!
So I ad-libbed needlessly.
Oh, yeah.
He was telling on himself. Rick grinned at his remark. He was a scrawny kid with a mop of brown hair that didn't quite hide his big ears. So you're just making fun of everything now.
Come on!
Carl had once heard Tracy call him a choir boy, and that fit. Because he had the voice of an angel. Except for being thin and pale, he looked like a cherub. I did a mile on the track the other day and broke 5 minutes, Rick said. Ain't bad for a lame duck.
Damn.
Actually, you know what? I'm going to reread that. I'm recasting Rick. He's now Matthew McConaughey.
Fuck yeah.
I did a mile on the track the other day and broke 5 minutes. Ain't bad for a lame duck.
All right.
Clint gets it. Were there any witnesses, Carl asked, like an asshole?
God was my witness. Hey, did Tracy call you last night? Carl hesitated, feeling guilty for not having returned the message. No, he said. She really wanted to know if you'd like to be on our team for the scavenger hunt. Really? Carl said. Rick immediately sensed his lack of interest. He was a sharp kid. I think we'd make a good team. Tracy's enthusiasm, your brains, and my good looks, he added hastily. Paula wants you too.
Oh, dip.
Carl looked away. He was a lousy liar, except when it came to lying to himself.
Oh, damn. God.
And that hurts. Tom said something about my being on his team. Tom? Nick asked. Tom Barrett, you know, my friend.
With the concussion.
It disturbed him how people had forgotten about Tom, now that his head injury kept him from playing the big athlete.
Oh, no.
Or remembering about them.
Nobody had forgotten Joe, all the touchdowns he had scored. Not that Joe didn't deserve to be remembered.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, him, Rick said. Who else is going to be in the group? But just the two of you, maybe we could team up with you. I don't know. Carl raised his head, seeing Rick's eager face. I'd like to also point out that for a town where nobody likes Carl, it seems like everybody likes Carl.
We definitely think you murdered your friend, and we all want you on our scavenger hunt team.
Can you help us, Carl? We love you.
What if that's like the thing he's like really good at? It's like, oh, look, for the scav hunt, gotta get Carl.
Carl will do whatever it takes.
He's so good at finding stuff. He will kill people.
Yeah.
He didn't understand why the kid looked up to him the way he did when Rick's IQ must have been twice his. Well, let's see when we all get to school, all right? I might not even take part.
He said, all right.
Yeah. You got work to do? Rick was giving him a polite out. Yeah, Carl said. Work to do. Got a ring job and a semi whose engine melted when it crossed our city line. Yeah, that's the ticket.
Was that just fake car stuff? Because it sounded like fake car stuff.
A ring job truly sounds made up. That sounds like something I would say. Rick wiped the sweat off
his brow. Those engine rings.
Yeah. Rick wiped the sweat off his brow with the back of his hand. I believe it. It's supposed to be 110 today. I hope the scavenger hunt leads us to water. Carl shivered at the remark, even though the sun beating down on the back of his head was making him feel as if he were in a matchstick. The sky was trying to light.
Water, but he took a shower earlier.
Also, how's the sun beating down the back of his head? He's in a truck.
Also, he doesn't remember the dream, right? Yeah, okay.
It made no sense that the dam in his dream should have spouted bloody water. Joe hadn't bled a drop. That's fucked up.
Is that what the book said?
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah.
So do I, Carl said without enthusiasm. Rick said goodbye and continued with his workout. Carl put his truck in gear and ran the light, which had turned green and then red again while they had talked, and he was like, yeah, fuck it. Ceci's place was big for Express and distinctive.
Well, she's in the rich town.
I know, yeah.
I'm just giving you a little background music.
Thank you.
Eucalyptus trees.
We appreciate it.
The lot had a good percentage of the mountain's trees, and as Carl drove up the long driveway and into the blessed shade, his spirits began to lift.
I bet.
Why would anyone live in the West? It's just too hot. He had never been inside the brown frame house, but he had been around back once with Tom.
Oh, spicy.
Excuse me.
As I was saying that, I'm like, yep, okay. Ceci's pool was like an underground lake. Ceci's pool was like an underground lake.
Go on.
Huge, with a black bottom, and maybe a white bottom now, too, if Ceci was still swimming a nude.
Was that you or the book?
That's in the book. Oh. I didn't add a single thing. He parked and walked around the side of the house without ringing the front doorbell. Ceci's parents were never home. the last Christopher Pike book we read was also the book with the fucking naked hot tub terrible flirting, remember?
Yes. Oh, I wish I could forget.
Sensing a pattern. Ceci was laughing and
what,
Tom...
What, teenage girls naked in
naked
bodies
teenage
of water?
Girls and boys being like... Ceci was laughing and Tom was spacing... Oh, God. I'm
oh,
so...
Tom.
I feel so bad for
Tom's
Tom.
Tom's a sweet baby.
Tom.
He's got his finger on the keyboard and he just keeps hitting space, 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 space. That Tom. He's a character.
He's got a word processor.
When Carl entered the backyard, surprisingly, Tom caught his attention first. Tom was sitting cross-legged on the white deck at the shallow end. The way the light blazed across the front of Tom's black shirt, Carl figured, I know, right? Figured he must be planted directly in the hottest part of the sun's reflection. Light doesn't blaze across black. It absorbs it.
Maybe it's like a leather shirt.
Ooh.
And it's shiny.
Yep. Okay. His leather black shirt. Not only that, he didn't...
It's the only thing that makes sense.
He didn't have on dark glasses, and he was staring into the very spot where the hardest angle of the sun hit the surface of the
God.
Pool.
Oh, God.
Tom! Tom, someone help him!
Someone put him in the shade. Oh, give him a hat.
Oh, but wait. This is the important sentence.
Oh, God.
Go on. Go on, gentlemen. Oh, no. Go ahead.
Yeah. He wasn't even squinting. Full eyeballs into the sun. Into the reflective
I
water sun, which is
God
worse,
that
I think.
He never experiences an eclipse.
Tom's eyes weren't following Ceci either, which might have been a sign of brain damage, but Carl had no such problem.
No other signs.
I already forgot. What's her actual name?
Cecilia.
Cecilia, okay. Ceci was at the far end of the pool in deep water. And with the black bottom, it was difficult to tell if she was wearing a suit or not.
How deep is... I'm sorry. Go on.
They're rich. It's probably
that's,
pretty
yeah,
deep.
That's crazy. Okay.
We had an above-ground pool. It was like 4 feet deep. It was not this fancy shit under the eucalyptus trees. The uncertainty raised Carl's substantial pulse several extra beats. He strolled toward the deck, trying to look casual. It was a wonderful thing, he thought, when nature placed a wild girl inside the body of a mature woman.
Excuse me. Excuse
and I quit.
Oh no, Becca's gone.
How the fuck old are they? They're in high school.
That's high school, right? Yeah.
Hello, kids.
Max,
he said
17.
Nonchalantly. Hello, Tom said, barely moving an eyebrow. Tom had a wide, blunt face, and even under the best of circumstances, showed scant emotions. Please stop describing people.
Please leave Tom alone.
Christopher Pike is a bitch. He is so mean.
Please leave
He's
Tom alone.
He's just so mean.
Tom
is
sweet
precious.
Summer child. Oh.
Today didn't look as if it would be one of his better days.
No.
A couple of months ago, Carl had seen an adaptation of Ray Bradbury's The Martian Chronicles on TV.
Nice.
And the bronze mask the Martians wore reminded him of Tom's mask-like face. And that saddened him. Before his football accident, Tom had been full of life. Fuck, this is depressing.
This is so sad.
Hi, Carl, Ceci called, her black curly hair plastered wet and dripping over her eyes.
Mm-hmm.
She brushed it aside and grinned at them, grinned at him with her wide mouth. Wanna get wet?
Damn,
I hate
Ceci!
That I had to read that. Carl briefly wondered if he wasn't still at home and dreaming. Ceci was treading water not far from the diving
not
board.
Not dreaming. There's no blood.
He had been wrong about her white bottom. White is italicized.
Excuse me.
She was definitely naked, he realized, and he could glimpse no break in the uniformity of her wonderful tan.
Oh, dear God.
I can't let this
I need a cigarette.
Oh, I feel like I'm going to go to jail.
That whole page.
Oh. Oh, no, like, no.
It gets worse. I can see
oh, yeah,
that it's
you're
worse.
Just barely.
Oh, no. Chris, right. Tell us.
Go. She probably went skinny dipping all the time in what I will now refer to as the cesspool. He wished she wouldn't splash quite so much so the water
okay,
could
now
calm
I
down
quit,
and let us see.
This is not getting better than that.
I'm turning into a pervert, he thought to himself.
Yes, just
the
now.
The author injected.
Yeah. I didn't bring my suit.
Best read so far.
And blushed in spite of his resolve to be totally cool.
Yeah, you blew Sessie. It. You beefed it.
Isn't it like 8 a.m. on a school day?
That's how she starts every school day.
What? Did Tom wake up there? Why is he there?
I don't know Sessie, what is happening.
Sessie twisted her head toward Tom. He doesn't have his suit, she called. What should we do?
Oh my god.
I don't know, Tom said. Sessie knew. If you can't join me, I suppose I better get out, she remarked, swimming toward Carl. When she reached the side, she held up her arm for a helping hand. The top of her right breast lifted above the waterline, and a very fine top of the breast it was. Sessie was built. But not only did she have him distracted, she had him suckered.
Get ready!
He had no sooner clasped her wet palm when he was falling headfirst into the water.
Yeah!
Jesus Christ. Oh. Who else is picturing Fast Times at
Ridgemont High? Fast Times at Ridgemont High! That's exactly what I was picturing!
Sexy Sessie.
Oh my god.
Oh, Carl, you're Sessie such a doll to join me, built. Sessie said oh, when Sessie. He surfaced. She didn't give him a chance to get angry. Splashing him in the face, she darted toward the shallow end with a flirtatious wink that said he was welcome to follow. And follow her he did, with his soaked pants and waterlogged sneakers
in more ways
the
than one
out of his strokes. And not just because of the water. Or was he just using the clothes as an excuse for not catching her? He was no slouch in the water, but she was an incredible swimmer. Before he could get to the step area, she had flipped over and pushed off the side and passed him underwater like a mermaid riding a torpedo.
Wow.
That's like a hat on a hat in a pool.
Having fun? Tom asked. Carl paused to take a breath. What time is it? Tom consulted his watch. Late? Carl tugged at his wet shirt. I think I'm going to be extra late. You can wear my clothes.
Ew, no!
You can wear my clothes. I've got my gym shorts on underneath these pants. I was going to go swimming in them. You sure? Thomas shrugged. I don't care what I wear to school.
Tom!
Oh, boys, Sessie called. What time is it? Carl received one of the major disappointments of his life when he turned around. Sessie had already climbed out of the pool and was in her bathrobe.
He saw a top of a boob. That's pretty good for a high schooler.
Oh, that would have me going through like 6 weeks at least.
He couldn't, that's halfway to first base. He couldn't believe his bad timing, nor could he believe not a flicker of interest had touched Tom's expression. When Tom must have seen the entire transition from water to bathrobe.
Leave Tom alone.
It's late, Carl called, climbing slowly up the pool steps. He got later before they left for school. Yes, that's how time works, Christopher.
You might be wearing your friend's pants he was already wearing, but you still need a shirt and shoes and shit.
Is Tom at one point going to turn to Carl and be like, I live outside of time, Carl?
I guess you'll just have to wait about 20 chapters, Christopher.
I'm the dream dragon that fell into the dam.
Sessie hadn't had breakfast yet, and she swore she just had to have breakfast. She disappeared inside for several minutes. Now that I think about it, I mean, if you had a thesaurus, what other word is there for breakfast? He used it twice in two sentences. Morning meal. She disappeared inside for several minutes. She disappeared inside for several minutes, and when she returned, effortlessly balancing a huge red tray in one hand, she had a meal fit for a king and queen. Crisp bacon, fat sausage, scrambled eggs, toast, juice, and a bowl of plump fruit. It's like reading George R.R. Martin.
How did that happen so fast?
She focuses so much on food.
Her mom's in there cooking while her daughter's naked in the pool with two boys.
It's Mean Girls.
I think it was her servants.
Yeah.
By this time, Carl had changed into Tom's shirt and pants. Tom had even lent him his sandals, preferring, he said, to go barefoot.
Sessie, Tom is in shorts only.
Yes.
No shoes, no shirt.
He's just wearing
the shorts.
You know what's depressing about that is that Tom can get literally everything. Because yes. the townsfolk will be like, Tom, where are your, where's your shirt and shoes? Hey, don't say that to Tom.
Yeah.
Yeah, they, nobody said a word. That's how bad it is.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, there's Tom. Tom being Tom.
Oh, there's goes Tom being Tom. Ever since
that
the accident.
Poor sweet baby angel.
Holy shit.
Stassi still had her white bathrobe on, though, and Carl was thankful for small favors. Really turning me around here, Carl. I don't know where you stand. Her long black hair had already begun to dry into its 25 natural curls. I'm sorry, I read the page number.
Wow, that's specific.
That was so effortless. Oh my God. The three of them sat to eat at a round glass table beneath the slanted wood beams of the porch. Maybe it was a pergola. We're going to miss the assembly on the scavenger hunt, Carl said. Trying the bait. So it's like a whole, it's like a school sanctioned thing. I thought I thought it was like a, what's that thing in the Gilmore Girls?
I thought it was a secret thing.
Where they do the, what's the club they do?
Yeah.
Life and Death Brigade.
Yeah.
This,
yeah. The, in Omnia Paratus.
The scope and the, just read on. Just read on.
The back of the books is a secretive club, but they have a school-wide assembly,
assembly.
They treat this scavenger hunt like spring freaking break.
Holy crap.
You'll see. You'll see.
Carl said, trying the bacon and liking it because it's fucking bacon.
Bacon.
Ceci must have had the food already prepared before going into the pool, you think, or else there was someone else home. It's taking the place of first period. Davy won't let it start until we get there, Ceci said, munching on two sausages while simultaneously sampling
her eggs. Wait, don't miss this.
Hold on.
Read that again, Jonathan.
Davy won't let it start until we get there, Ceci said, munching on two sausages
while
simultaneously sampling her eggs.
So two sausages, eggs, and speaking.
So she's got, here's what I picture. Two forks, one in each hand, sausage on each fork, and she's going,
and then leaning forward and getting a mouthful of eggs.
Maybe we won't let it start until we get there.
That is quite a lot of food to eat at once while you're talking.
Mm-hmm. It
in
certainly
a bathroom.
Is, Jonathan.
Davy was Ceci's brother. I don't need another person in this book.
No, yeah. This
there's
is...
so many characters.
God.
I need to like make a tree.
He was senior class president. They were in the same grade, although the two had only arrived in Express at the end of last summer, and next to no one knew them when school had begun in the fall. Davy had somehow managed to win the office by his extravagant promises.
Two sausages for every person!
Sausage and eggs every day! School's gonna start fucking late. You can swim.
I loved it.
Yeah.
Come out of the water fountains.
Oh, it's even better. Read the next sentence.
Davy had actually told the class he was going to see to it that they had live entertainment every day at lunch. Spin Doctors!
Gentlemen, Casey and the Sunshine Band!
Every day, Spin Doctors! No one had believed him, but they had voted for him anyway.
You had the era right. That the book takes place.
He was a smooth talker. I don't like this. They didn't have live entertainment once the entire year, and that was the first taste they got of politicians breaking promises that they made on the campaign trail.
Did they not have fights at lunch every day? Because we had that. That was kind of entertaining. Everyone yelled.
Yeah. I don't know. We didn't have fights at lunch, but...
He went to Catholic school.
I went to Catholic school.
You guys don't need me for foreshadowing.
Does Davy know how Mr. Partridge's club has organized the hunt? Carl asked. He says no, Ceci said. Do you believe him? He's my brother.
He's class president.
Who?
Davy.
Davy's class president.
Okay.
Yeah.
He's my brother, she said. Of course not. I'm glad he's on our team then, Carl said. Maybe we'll win. Ceci grinned, showing her dimples. Her face was round, too cute to be clawed. Hang on, I'm sorry.
To be clawed. Coming out this summer.
Too cute. You gotta be cute to be clawed. Her face was round, too cute to be called classically beautiful, and, however, too sensual to be thought of as innocent. She's a real
fucking
enigma. I love when men write women.
I love when men...
It makes so much sense.
I love
and
when
it's
men
not horrible at
write
all.
17-year-old girls.
Oh, it's
are
worse.
Are we sure?
Immediately. No, immediately it gets worse.
No.
Are we sure Christopher Pike isn't a pseudonym for Emily Bronte?
Her lush lips were the first thing a guy noticed about her, if not her wonderful hair. In fantasies, whenever Carl kissed her.
If you do remember, she's built.
I want to stop immediately.
Go on, please, though.
He always felt as if he were being eaten alive by those full lips. I should have followed my instincts.
I really should have been drinking while you said that.
Eat me, Carl.
Eaten alive? Huh, interesting.
See, now I feel like you're just tricking us. I don't know what to believe.
Oh my god.
She swallowed the remains of her sausage and batted her thick black lashes over her dark blue eyes. She was such a tease.
She was such a tease, just chomping down on a sausage.
Eating food and blinking. I'm not positive Davey knows a shortcut to the jackpot, she said, and touched his hand with her fingertip. One fingertip. That's why we want you on our team, to make sure we win. If you're worried about winning, Carl said, pleased with her comment, then you should have recruited Rick Morrow. He's got the brains. Ceci glanced at Tom, who was carefully buttering his fourth piece of toast. Tom. Any day now, he would begin to eat the bread, so he's just buttering it and not eating it.
No,
Tom!
No!
I'm gonna cry tonight thinking about Tom.
I'm so depressed.
God only knew how he and his vivacious, or how he and vivacious Ceci had become such good friends. Maybe because she has a heart and isn't so judgmental. Could we get Master Richard, she asked. He's going to be on a team with his sister and Tracy White, Tom said. Who told you that? Carl asked, curious how Tom had come across the obscure information when he had trouble keeping track of when tomorrow was.
It's tomorrow.
God. It's
but
Tom.
It's
oh, no, it's Tomorrow.
It's Tomorrow. That's how he always knows when it is.
That's how he knows.
But that was the thing about Tom. He was out there in right field with the mushrooms.
What?
But he had brought along binoculars and could tell you who was sitting behind the home plate umpire. Right field is where you put the worst player, but I don't know about mushrooms being there.
Yeah, they got a terrible grounds crew there.
Yeah, this is a really weird metaphor.
It's really cool and damp in Express.
Except for all the desert.
Except for all the hot desert. I forgot.
I don't know, Tom said. Maybe we could team up with their team halfway through the hunt, Ceci suggested.
Tom paused and put down his butter knife and looked at her.
I heard that's against the rules.
The rules? Ceci snorted. Who made those up, Mr. Partridge?
Probably.
Weird. He hasn't taken off his sunglasses once the entire year.
Wait.
You know what I think? I think he's a vampire.
That's what I said!
Clint said no, though!
Yeah.
A friend of mine is in one of his classes, Carl said. English literature. All he does is have them read books and write reports he never grades. He never lectures.
He doesn't drink wine.
I never see him eat human food.
I still don't think we need Rick on our team, Tom said.
Ceci returned his look and had a sudden change of heart. You're probably right.
The four of us will be enough, Tom said.
Ceci removed her finger from Carl's hand and reached for the strawberries. Carl, she asked. Did you used to go out with Tracy White? No. Who told you that? No one. Ceci popped a couple of strawberries in her mouth.
A couple?
Specifically two.
This girl.
Specifically two.
Two sausages, two strawberries.
She's
suggesting nothing.
I'm not judging. I'm just like, she likes to eat.
It's just the way
she
looks
at you sometimes. He said earlier she has a wide mouth.
That's true. That's true.
Which is information I wish I didn't have.
Several strawberries.
Carl knew Ceci was pulling his leg. I'm afraid she hasn't had the pleasure, he said, once again trying to sound casual. Light banter didn't come easily for him, especially
no kidding.
With a girl as pretty as Ceci. He was much more comfortable crunched on his back beneath an oily engine, even though he hated his job.
I already forgot he worked in like a garage.
The joint where he worked.
Oh my god.
The garage was full of savages. He had to get out of there and out of Express too. Take us home, Clint.
Take us home, Clint!
Ceci chewed her strawberries slowly, savoring, so it seemed to him, the feel of them in her mouth more than their taste, her wet, white bathrobe almost loose enough to make his disappointment of a few minutes ago a thing of the distant past.
Like this.
She didn't elaborate upon her remark. Why do you ask? He asked, finally. Again, thesaurus, look into it.
Yeah.
And no reason, she said. And she smiled at him.
With ba, strawberry
ba,
teeth.
Ba, 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 ba.
Now, be honest. You three are never going to finish this book, are you?
Oh, no, we definitely are.
We're going to finish it so hard.
I'm going to tell you something.
Yeah.
From this point, I want to tell you, I enjoyed reading this book. I really did.
I mean, there's been a blast.
But I'm telling you something. They introduce the scavenger hunt. And they start on the scavenger hunt. And at that point, Christopher Pike says, you know that crazy shit that was going on in the first couple of chapters? You ain't seen nothing yet,
baby. Oh, yes! That is what I want from a Christopher Pike book.
And I will also say, a lot of the stuff that you guys speculated about, even if you didn't mean to, is right. And a lot of the stuff, you couldn't, in the middle of your wildest acid dream, you could not have come up with.
Classic Pike.
That is all I want from a Christopher Pike book.
Like, once we got to Robot from the Future trying to bang her grandfather in the past, I was like, you know what? Fucking jury's out. Like, I can't do it. I can't figure it out. Like, I'm just along for the ride.
Oh, my friend. Oh my friend. My friend.
So good. So good.
I want to see which one you thought was nutsier. This one or that one.
I will gladly let you know.
Okay. Yeah.
Thank you so much for being on our show with us. This was absolutely a blast. Did you have a good time?
I had a great time. I love it. Awesome. I mean, it's I even think next time I fly to Germany, I'm going to read another Christopher Pike.
Yes. Oh, we made a convert.
Keep up the tradition.
That's fantastic. For anyone listening, is there anything you would like to plug?
Oh gosh, yes, my Christopher Pike fan cast. and you can find out everything at www.themcelroyfamily. Mm-hmm. TheMcElroy.family.
Okay.
www.themcelroy.family. It's got all the stuff in there. We've got, we do the McElroy Family Podcast, the McElroy Family Clubhouse is live every Tuesday at noon. It's so a blast.
I love it so much. Yeah.
We've got some, you were talking about hiking in the desert. That we've got something coming up that you're going to love.
Ooh, excited.
Of course, Taz is in the middle of I don't know if it's the middle or not. I don't know the geographic spot, but we're currently on the Adventure Zone doing
Abnimals.
Abnimals. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And we're having a blast with it.
Yeah.
We were challenged by some people. Can you do a family, something I can listen to with my family?
Yeah.
And I always used to say, yeah, if it's the Manson family. But so we're having a blast doing Abnimals. The sixth graphic novel in the Adventure Zone series came out earlier this summer. We right now, the seventh and final one. Ooh.
Oh, geez.
Am I breaking that story? Anyway. We'll be coming out. We'll be making an announcement about that very soon. Okay, good.
You're bringing it to our one listener.
Yeah. I don't want to get.
Which might be you. So.
I don't want to. That's true. I did attest to that earlier. And it's just, we've got our Candle Night show coming up soon.
Oh, nice.
Which is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And then we will be touring again, starting up again in the first of the year. A lot of really cool stuff coming up.
But that's really exciting.
I just am the luckiest guy in the world. I get to do stuff like this with cool people like you, and I get to travel around the world with my family. And I keep waiting for somebody to get wise to this scam. And I just keep being the remora on the shark that is my children.
Well, you get to, though, because you raised them.
I get to, yeah.
You guys are fantastic. We love all of your stuff. We haven't yet made it to a live show. We were going to make it to one of your shows was like 2 years ago, but we had to go to a family
wedding.
Yeah,
I had to go to my stupid cousin's wedding the last time you guys were in D.C.
And furious.
I really was so close to just not going to the wedding.
We were furious.
Keep your eyes on the skies, my friend.
Yeah.
The next Very time you soon guys... there will be... There may be something that'll please you.
Yeah, the next time you are in, like, D.C., if you're anywhere near, I don't know if you guys ever come to Baltimore, but we're in Baltimore. But next time you guys are in D.C., we are 100% going because we've just been waiting for it. And
love it. Love it.
Can't recommend it enough. We love your stuff. We have your books. We listen to Adventure Zone and Mabim Bam and all that kind of stuff.
Buy more. My whole retirement depends on it. So I make lovely Christmas gifts.
You don't have to convince us. Everyone listening, go to the macroly.family and check out all their stuff. They're fantastic.
Cool.
Thank you so much for listening. You can find all of our stuff, cactusrodeo.com and cactusrodeo.com/podcast. Subscribe to this show, the Below Grade Level. We're on TikTok and Instagram. And check out our other shows, The Sketchy Show and the somewhat new Casting Dreams, which is all about the Sega Dreamcast. And we're finishing our first season on that fairly soon. And we'll be back next year with a second season, diving into even more Dreamcast games. So a whole lot of nerdy shit, video games and YA books and sketch comedy. It's all
there.
And
also check out Pop Sega Theater on YouTube.
Yes.
It's not spelled how you think it is.
It's not spelled how you think it is. You gotta look it up. And season two of that will be coming at some point in our lifetime. It's been on hiatus.
Sometime before we die,
sometime
probably.
Before we die, we'll make it. It's fine.
We got jobs to work. It's fine.
Well, Clint, thank you so much for being our guest on this episode. And for everyone listening, we love you. Bye.
We love
Bye.
You.
Bye.
Bye.
Below Grade Level is a Cactus Radio production. You can contact us at podcast@cactusrodeo.com. Subscribe and follow on iTunes, Stitcher, and Spotify, and follow Cactus Rodeo on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for more entertainment and updates.